Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob Inyart Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We'll be talking about the first two lessons of the Trump nomination. But first, some news. The New York Times, you know, over a century ago, 115 years ago, the New York Times led the effort to make sure abortion was banned in every state. The New York Times, that liberal, humanist, anti-Christian, pro-abort, pro-sodomite, socialist newspaper of record, the New York Times, was the force behind making sure that abortion was against the law throughout the United States. That was a century ago. Today, of course, the blood is on their hands. They're child killers. And so it's interesting to note their gradual demise, along with much of the rest of the print industry. The New York Times has been the paper of record for over a century. And now in the first quarter of 2016, they lost $14 million. And so that's, you know, their revenue was $380 million. So they took in $380 million, but because of their expenses and overhead, they lost $14 million. And a year ago, in the first quarter, they took in $384 million. So their revenue fell about 1%, and their losses were significant. And so it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of folks that the print media across this nation is in crisis. Thousands of people have lost their jobs. Hopefully, thousands of more will, for they become an industry that was bloodthirsty, seeking to dismember innocent children. And every other form of immorality and sexual immorality and socialism that would serve to undermine a society that understands that right and wrong come from God. That God has revealed to us what right and wrong is. And in polite society in our culture, if you mention God or that God has revealed his principles to us, they do their best to make you feel like you're a fool, like you're a buffoon. But who is the buffoon? Who is the fool? And so the New York Times, gradually dying a death of 1,000 lashes, we hope, for the old gray lady. We hope. Okay. So we've been watching that for years now, as paper after paper has gone out of business. You know, Newsweek is what? Newsweek is hanging on by a thread, right? Their website, it's not even newsweek.com, it's the Daily Beast. The Daily Beast is the carcass of Newsweek. And so we continue to keep an eye on all those developments. And then also this story, wow. You know, people don't realize, because there's such a rejection of God and a mocking of God, yet ultimately God will not be mocked and he will have the last laugh, so to speak. But over in England, they are now developing human embryos in the lab, and they are letting them live for twice the amount of time, the length of time that had previously been the norm. It used to be that the baby, the tiny baby, a little boy or a girl, at that first cell, it's a boy or a girl. It either has an X and a Y chromosome, meaning it's a boy, because you inherit your Y chromosome from your father, or it's two X's, that you happen to get an X from your dad, not a Y, and you get only an X from your mother, so two X's, it's a little girl, and that happens at the moment of fertilization, and as was in the news, a couple weeks ago, the flash of light that occurs at fertilization. We've talked about this on the show for some years, that at fertilization, there's an explosion of life, and all the things that happen, and the ovum itself dramatically changes. Because before that, the ovum is looking for a suitor, so to speak. And when that ovum is then fertilized, then it rebuffs all other suitors. Just like a woman should when she's engaged to a man, she's married, then any other suitor, it's too late. So the same thing happens to the ovum. And now we have video of that moment of fertilization that is accompanied by a flash of light, which is just so astounding, so awesome. And people say, well, isn't that a miracle? No, creation was a miracle when God created. But when God made Adam and Eve, he gave them the ability to procreate. And through procreation, that's a natural act. And so we do not need to supersede the physical or spiritual laws to procreate and to bring into existence an eternal offspring, a little boy or a little girl who will grow up and then live forever. That doesn't require a miracle. So, in fact, at times there is the most heinous crime imaginable, and it results in the conception of a child. And that's not a miracle. That's the normal course of events in the way that God made us. When animals reproduce, if you're a shepherd and you have, you know, lambs are born, it's a wonderful thing, and it shows the creativity and the brilliance of God, but it's not a miracle. That's what happens in the course of nature. It's very natural. So at any rate, previously they would, like an IVF clinic, in vitro fertilization, in a petri dish, they would take a human ovum and human sperm, and they would fertilize the ovum. Happened for the first time, how long ago? Was it back in the 1960s when they first fertilized a human ovum outside of the body and in a laboratory, in a petri dish? So until recently, they would allow that fertilized egg, which is now a tiny little boy or girl, to grow in that petri dish for up to 7 days. Now they have just gone, they've doubled that. So now they're going over in England to 13 days. And by law, they can go to 14 days. And they're trying now to extend that. And what they don't realize they're doing, they don't care, because in even when the few Christian voices left in England, when they try to speak to these researchers or speak to governing officials, they mostly don't care. What they don't realize is they're dealing with a tiny little baby, a little girl or a little boy. And to do research on that child, to harvest that child's parts, that child will one day, they will one day meet the children that they have used as though they were property, as though they were lab rats, as though they were animals. They will meet those children. Dr. Mengele, the German Nazi, with his medical experiments on twins and others, children, he will meet those children on Judgment Day. And these scientists, and in America, the IVF clinic near you that discards children, they will meet those children someday. And the pain, the suffering that they cause those kids, and they think, oh, there can't be any pain because there's no nervous system developed yet. Well, pain, you know, emotional pain is far greater than physical pain. One of the most painful things we think of physically is the act of childbirth. Right, how painful that is, I wouldn't know. I'm a guy. I know it's bigoted to say I'm a guy, but I'm a guy. So I wouldn't know. But millions of women know the pain of childbirth and how terrible it is. But When the baby's born, how many times have we seen, do we know, the baby is placed in the mother's arms and she begins crying tears of joy? And sure, there's a recovery period, but far and away, the vast majority of times, she's overcome with joy, and the pain of childbirth quickly becomes a memory. Whereas, how about the mom who gives birth to a child and then the child dies? Maybe the child is 6 months old, or dies at birth, or at 4 years of age. Now, that's not physical pain. Well, it sure feels like physical pain, doesn't it? But it's emotional pain. And emotional pain is far more devastating than physical pain. Because physical pain has to be translated to get to your soul spirit for you to comprehend it. So physical pain is more superficial. You suffer in your soul. And so in your physical body, sometimes people have had a limb cut off, they don't even realize it. Then they find out their limb is cut off. And then it hurts bad. So you suffer in your soul, in your spirit. A tree doesn't have a soul or a spirit. So you cut off a branch, it's not sad. But an animal, like a pet, a horse, dog, cat, dolphin, God gave animals a soul and a different depth, a different quality of soul for different kinds of animals, to the extent that God wanted those animals to be able to have a relationship with one another and with human beings, like the horse and his rider. And so an animal can suffer. I don't think all animals can suffer, but some animals can suffer because based on the quality of a soul that God gave to that kind of creature. So this little boy or this little girl, the first one that they kept alive to 13 days. And then what did they do with it? They discarded it at an IVF clinic. They fertilize a half a dozen of a mother's eggs, and they say, well, this one here looks the best. Let's throw these out, and let's use this one. And the ones that get thrown out, to think that they will not suffer because they were rejected is so foolish and so short-sighted. So they're keeping these children alive in a laboratory for 13 days. They're hoping to go beyond that. They're exhilarated that they could observe the development. And whatever they do then with those cells, that little child, it doesn't matter to them as a moral issue. And that's just absolutely devastating. Okay, so that's in the news today in the very grisly business of treating children as though they were stock and trade. And then I want to get to the lessons of, well, the lessons of the Trump nomination. So Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee. We said that, when was it, 2 weeks ago? A week and a half ago, that Donald Trump was the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party. And the two lessons that should be overtly obvious now to people who care about right and wrong, who care about the world, care about the country, care about the morality of the body of Christ, is that moral relativism cannot be controlled, and that Trump's candidacy exposes the fraudulent pro-life Christians who have pretended that, well, my candidate really is, he's against abortion, he's against killing children, he doesn't want to kill any children, and Donald Trump is a lifelong child killer who said what he had to say to get the Republican nomination. And if someone is a fool enough to believe his lies, well, then they're a fool. If Trump had decided that he'd be better off running for the nomination as a Democrat, he would have been bragging that he'll be the strongest supporter of the pro-choice position as anyone has ever been. That's what he would be saying. But he decided to run for the Republican nomination. And so to get the support of the base and the people who come out during primaries, it's a safe bet to say that you're pro-life. And that's what he's done. He's also said that he thinks his sister would make a fabulous Supreme Court justice. You know that, right? Have you guys heard that? That Trump thought his sister would make a fabulous Supreme Court justice? And that's sort of like, that's not necessarily just an idle threat, because she's a federal judge. Marianne Barry. You guys know Marianne Trump Barry is a federal judge. She was appointed to the federal judiciary decades ago. She's a federal trial court judge. And she's been strongly pro-abortion. And there was a ban on partial birth abortion that Marianne Trump Barry struck down, writing that writing that it was unconstitutionally vague, the ban on partial birth abortion. And that's where the abortionist takes the baby out in a breech birth, feet first, which is dangerous to the mother also. Breech birth, feet first, stops when the head is about to come out, and then kills the baby by sticking a scissors into the back of the baby's neck. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up, right? This is what the Democrats defend. So that's partial birth abortion. And so it was in New Jersey, a law was passed to ban partial birth abortion. And Marianne Trump, as a federal judge, voted to strike it down, and it was struck down. So that partial birth abortion continued to be permitted in the state of New Jersey. And Donald Trump, very aware of the criticism of his sister as being aggressively pro-abortion, rejected that, praised her as a judge, entertained the idea of her being a Supreme Court justice, and during an August 2015 interview regarding that possibility, he said, "I think she'd be phenomenal. I think she'd be one of the best." And what do you think about that? You think he was lying when he said that? You think he only said that because she was his sister? Or do you think he would love to extend his own influence by having a second member of his immediate family in the federal government put his sister on the Supreme Court for the rest of her life? Of course, that's a possibility. And so you have, you know, if you've been around a while, you recognize the liars. And some people love to be lied to. They want to be lied to. Sarah Palin was early on supportive of Donald Trump's campaign for the presidential nomination. And do you think it mattered to her whether Trump was pro-life or pro-abortion? Do you think she cared? Because everybody from James Dobson on down, the Christian pro-lifers, they just swooned over Sarah Palin, that she's a Christian pro-lifer. And if you remember, and by the way, we had a listener to the show say, "You know, I listened to the show for a long time. I've never gone to Pro-Life Profiles, never gone to it. I've gone to it, and I'm just..." He was stunned by the profiles of, well, Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin, Billy Graham, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, Sarah Palin. And Sarah Palin, in 2009, she's the governor of Alaska, and she has to appoint someone to the state Supreme Court. And they got a weird system up there. And they have to pick from a set of candidates who are recommended to them by, I think it's the State Bar Association. So other governors have had situations like that where they say, well, you got to pick one of these three, and they say none of them are qualified. I refuse to name one of those three. I refuse. And that's called leadership. So Sarah Palin was, they recommended one who was a radical environmentalist, another who was a board member of Planned Parenthood. How's that? Not just somebody who donated to Planned Parenthood, not just somebody who is pro-choice, but a Planned Parenthood board member. And what did Sarah Palin do? And another candidate. So she selected the Planned Parenthood board member, put her, this woman, on the state Supreme Court, saying that she would be great for Alaska. And that Judge Kristen is the name, Morgan Kristen, the Planned Parenthood board member who Sarah Palin then appointed to the state Supreme Court. And she wrote this. And by the way, at the time, I saw her comment about Judge Kristen and American Right to Life. I was putting together the profile for them for Sarah Palin. We put it on their website, on ProLifeProfiles.com and on American Right to Life's website. And the media then reported that as soon as we highlighted this quote of Sarah Palin's, Sarah Palin's PAC, her Political Action Committee, scrubbed her site and removed all their comments about Judge Morgan Kristen. As soon as we put out a press release, we went to Sarah Palin's book signing events in Colorado Springs and Indianapolis. We handed out thousands of copies of this profile. And here's what she wrote. She wrote, I have every confidence that Judge Kristen has the experience, intellect, wisdom, and character to be an outstanding Supreme Court justice. Outstanding. She's a board member of Planned Parenthood. A board member of Planned Parenthood. You see the dereliction of duty of Dr. James Dobson and Focus on the Family? Do you realize the dereliction of duty of our Christian leaders? This information was available to everybody. And it was only small groups, the resistance, who are pointing out that our Christian leaders are lying to us about the people who say they're against child killing just so they get our money and our vote to keep all the establishment in power, to keep them in power, and to make their donors, National Right to Life's donors, feel like they're accomplishing something. And so they lie to them. And they're going to answer on Judgment Day. Because if they were Germans in 1930 and 40, they would have been lying then too. There's no difference. And so now Sarah Palin, right, has been part of Donald Trump's, one of the many who've endorsed him for the presidential nomination. And the fact that Trump supports killing children, the fact that Donald Trump on April 21st, 2016, supported changing the Republican Party platform to permit the killing of innocent children, you think that would give Sarah Palin pause? Do you think that's going to give Sean Hannity pause? Do you think that's going to give any of the pro-life leaders who are going to endorse Donald Trump? What they believe is that their child killer is better than the other child killer. That's what they believe, and that's exactly wrong. Your child killer is always the worst child killer for you and yours, for you and yours. And so God didn't care about all the apples Eve did not eat. Did God care? Here's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We don't know what kind of fruit tree it was, but let's say it was an apple tree. Right? Apple's logo is the apple with the bite out of it. So let's say it's an apple tree. And so God said, do not eat of that tree. And Eve was tempted by Lucifer. and she took one of the apples and took a bite out of it. Did God care about all the fruit that Eve did not eat? Did when Jesus Christ, in this temporary, this Christophany, when he temporarily took on the human form that he would later take on permanently, so he walked in the cool of the garden, calling out for Adam and Eve after they had both sinned. Did he care about all the apples on the tree that they did not eat? Did he say, wow, look at that. There's the tree. It's still full of fruit. It's so great that you guys didn't eat all of it. You only ate one. How about King David? Did God send the prophet Samuel to David to talk about all the women in the realm that he did not violate? Is that what God did? Did Samuel say, David, there are 200,000 women in the kingdom that you did not violate? That's really great. King Herod, did God list all the children whom Herod did not kill and compliment him for that? No, God expects us to look at the exceptions, because God looks at the exceptions. And if you're supporting someone who says, you know, I don't like lynching blacks, but there are some blacks who just deserve it. Or I'm against gassing Jewish children. Generally, I'm against the Holocaust. But, you know, we can't be extremist. And I oppose protecting all Jewish children. I'm against killing Christians, but I'm not an extremist. I'm against dismembering children, but I'm not an extremist. I'm a Republican. And don't waste your vote. Don't waste your vote. What are you going to throw away your vote? Oh, you're going to vote for Hillary, huh? And all those apoplectic Republicans who are devastated that Trump has won. And they've said, the ones who've said they're not going to vote for Trump, they're the exact people who for the last 25 years have said to me, oh, you're voting for the Democrat, huh? You're voting for Clinton, huh? You're voting for Al Gore, huh? You're voting for Obama, huh? The exact same ones, those hypocrites. And so there's no bottom to that abyss. When they tell you to vote for the lesser of two evils, your guy only wants to kill a few thousand. Their guy wants to kill millions. There's no bottom to that abyss. Eventually, you'd vote for the devil because you think somebody else might be worse. God bless.